Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, also a GP from Somerset.
And today we're talking about pelvic health, and I'm delighted to welcome Debbie Dillon. Debbie, could you introduce yourself and just explain what your role is around pelvic health?
Thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak. So my role is I'm an advanced practitioner in pelvic health, physiotherapist, and I run the service across the whole of Somerset. And we see patients who come with a variety of conditions in to see us. So those conditions can be anything from urinary incontinence, prolapse. They can be, you know, having it during pregnancy, postnatally, any stage of life. And then very often we get an increase in referrals around perimenopause or menopause. Men can also be seen for issues with their pelvic floor as well, which very often is to do with their prostate and kind of issues with prostate, either prostate cancer or enlarged prostate, where they might have some urgency or urinary incontinence issues. And then we also see people to do with sexual dysfunction. So which could
be... Can we just clarify, when you say urgency and frequency, what are you meaning?
So that they might need to go to have a pee a lot more often than usual. And so they're finding they can't put it off. So they're dreading going on a car journey, you know, but they just, you know, need to know exactly where the toilets are. So we call, you know, kind of toilet chasers, really.
So when we're saying urgency, you're saying, oh, I need to spend a penny now.
Yeah.
Saying frequency is we're peeing often than 4 or 5 times a day that the average person pees. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Are there any, if we start off with incontinence, because that's quite a lot of conditions there to unpack. So if we start off with incontinence, and we'll start with women, are there any, when you say incontinence, what do we mean?
So we mean somebody not able to hold their bladder contents that would have a leak. And so there's two main reasons they've had that would have that would be stress urinary incontinence, when there's stress put on the bladder, and basically that is pushing down and the pelvic floor isn't able to hold. So if you cough or sneeze, or if you jump or do exercise, so somebody might cough or sneeze but be fine, but they go off for a run and then they might have a problem. And so that's very, very often very related to childbirth, but it doesn't necessarily have to be childbirth. We can have younger people who have what they used to call giggle incontinence. So they'd laugh and they'd leak. So that's one type of incontinence.
And does that tend to be a large amount unique or just a small amount?
It can vary. So it can be a few drops to somebody literally having to wear huge pads or even protective pants. And obviously, as you can imagine, those symptoms can totally affect somebody's life. And then you have that vicious circle where they don't want to go out or do exercise because they leak, and then they're putting on weight, and then they get other medical conditions as a result. It can very often just start as something so simple, but it's so embarrassing, people won't go and speak about it.
And you mentioned the other sort is urge incontinence. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So where the patient, they could be fine and they could cough or sneeze and not have any leakage, but actually it's when they really need to go to the loo. So if they need to spend a penny, they're kind of going, I need to get there now. And the more they're thinking about it, the more they have to go and they just can't put it off. Because most of us should be able to put it off, especially when we're in clinic and go, I can't go now. You just have to wait. And, you know, it's not a problem, but there are some patients who literally can't do anything. And then that can be that vicious circle where they're going for a wee, then they kind of go, and then an hour later they need to go. And that can be more often and more often and more often that, you know, some patients could be going at least every hour.
And can you give us an idea of the scale of the problem? It's something Kate and I see very frequently in surgery, and I suspect it's a lot commoner because people are often very reluctant to talk about this, aren't they?
Yes. It's huge. And obviously, they say it takes a few years even sometimes for people to say anything. But the kind of statistics showing are 1 in 3 females have urinary incontinence, which is really high.
And what's causing the incontinence?
So a lot of the time it is childbirth, but it can be a combination of reasons. And so sometimes it can be the pelvic floor can be weak. So having had a baby, you know, they've been put through a lot of pressure, the poor pelvic floor, they've held a baby for 9 months, they've delivered, they might have had a cut or tear and not necessarily had any trauma on delivery. And basically, as a result, the muscles just need to be rehabbed again. And then that's the same kind of in perimenopause, menopause, the pelvic floor is getting lack of estrogen. So it mightn't be working as well. And something as simple as doing pelvic floor exercises can really, really help. And it's very cheap.
I'm interested you mention estrogen because I think it's something that we've only recognized recently that for a lot of women getting recurrent urinary tract infections, incontinence and things like that after the menopause, it's that lack of estrogen in the vagina and that topical estrogen is incredibly safe and very effective. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yes. I mean, it must be one of the biggest reasons I write to you, your colleagues all the time requesting, you know, vaginal estrogen because it can make such a difference. And as well with patients with prolapse, you know, it can just help them with the symptoms of that. And obviously vaginal dryness, which can affect their sex lives and make sex painful. And something just tweaking very easily can help. And actually more and more recently, I'm noticing some of the postnatal women who are breastfeeding and some are more prone to getting kind of vaginal dryness or just more uncomfortable down there. Sometimes while they're still feeding, and having some vaginal estrogen, that can really help in that time until they finish breastfeeding.
And does HRT have the same benefit as topical estrogen?
Not what we found with pelvic floor, not really. You know, I'm not too sure how much clinical evidence is out there exactly on it, but, you know, clinically, as seeing all these patients every day, we're not seeing a huge benefit when they have it systemically. And that's where I think patients always get confused that if they have systemic estrogen, they actually can have vaginal as well.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I was just going to revisit the pelvic floor exercises that you were talking about earlier on, and you said they were very helpful. Can you describe how people can do a pelvic floor exercise?
So your pelvic floor goes from the end of the spine, so down in the coccyx, up towards underneath and up towards the pubic bone, and then it splays out either side to the two sitting bones. And so when you want somebody doing their pelvic floor, initially what we want is somebody to just recruit their pelvic floor to make sure they're not cheating with other muscles. And so what you want to do is to pull up from the back passage, zipping it up all the way up to the pubic bone and holding that if you can. But the hardest thing is actually making sure you're breathing. That's where most people find it difficult because automatically they want to pull in their pelvic floor and go and pull it in on the in-breath. But actually, we're better to pull it in as you breathe out because that's our pelvic floor works like a piston and that's how you get the biggest contraction. I'm a physio in the end of the day, so I like full range of movement. And by doing it that way, you get full range of movement and a better contraction. And two things that are really important is your breathing and you let it go when you've finished, because we get a lot of people holding onto their pelvic floor, which can cause problems. And so it's really important to make sure you pull it up. So you zip it up from the back passage all the way up to the pubic bone. You then hold that pelvic floor. And while you're holding the pelvic floor, count out loud to 10 and see how your voice changes. So if you're counting away 1, 2, 3, and that's okay. You don't want to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, because that I didn't have to take a breath. And so that's really, really important. And getting in those basic levels first is the most important thing. And if you're finding that difficult, you definitely, I'd recommend going to see a pelvic health physio.
So we were always taught when I was a medical student to do pelvic floor exercises. Imagine you needed to spend a penny and pull those muscles up. Is that the same muscles that you're describing?
Yes, it is. But we say, so it used to be, even when I started out, it used to be pull in your pelvic floor when you go for a wee. But that's not good now, because what we find is people don't empty their bladders and they can be more prone to getting a wee infection. And so it's really important that they do think of it that way, and also as if trying to stop passing wind. But think of it as one big zip rather than trying to pull up at the back, trying to pull up at the front, because that's where crystals very well.
We're taught it as two separate, do the back muscles and then do the front.
Yeah. They come together as one.
And the other advice we used to get given was to tell ladies to do it when they were standing in the supermarket at the checkout and things like that. Is that still good advice?
Yeah, well, yes, but I'd come back a step. So I'd say start off, first of all, in maybe sitting. So just sitting nice and relaxed, pulling up that pelvic floor, seeing can you hold it for 10 seconds and making sure you can breathe. And then what you're hoping to do, that's the endurance. You hold for 10 seconds and you would aim to repeat that 10 times. And then you also need to do the quick ones, which are you squeeze that pelvic floor and you let go and you're aiming for 10 of those. So then I would say, if you can do those and you're able to do them 10 seconds, 10 times, then I would push you into standing. But it's quite difficult to do the pelvic floor and actually reach 10 seconds, 10 times and concentrate in the middle of a supermarket. So I kind of say to people, a really good time is brushing your teeth. So we should get the pelvic floor 2 to 3 times a day and brushing your teeth. So if you're struggling and doing it in standing, you can sit down in a closed toilet.
That's really clear and helpful, Debbie. Two questions, if I may. One, do you recommend that people do these exercises before they start having problems with incontinence? Is it helpful to in terms of prevention? And secondly, I'm aware there are various devices and so on that can supplement the excellent advice you've given. Do you want to say a little bit about those?
Yeah. So, what was the first question before the devices again?
The first question is whether people should do these exercises when they know they've got a problem or whether it's worth doing it beforehand.
So, yeah, no, totally agreed. We all have a pelvic floor, so we should be using it. What it can be really good is to make sure you're using it correctly, and then you can bring it into your form of exercise. So for example, if you do Pilates, bring it into your Pilates class. So instead of just thinking about your tummy, you're zipping up that pelvic floor. But as I said, make sure you're breathing and make sure you let it go. They're the two biggest things we need to keep remembering. And so, yeah, so that's really good. I mean, from, you know, kind of puberty onwards, we should be thinking about it. And obviously, if you have elite athletes or anybody else, they would need to think about it as well in a different way. So that's really, really important. And then secondly, devices. First, being totally honest, I've gone back to kind of more lack of devices. And so there's an app called Squeezy, which is an NHS endorsed app, which is very, very good for your pelvic floor. And that does both men and women, different ones for both. And that's a very, very good to start you off and make sure you're doing it correctly. I would, if you're struggling, before you buy any devices, to be honest, and if you're finding using that app quite difficult, that's where I'd recommend get a referral to a pelvic floor physio. Then if you find you're using that app and you're doing really well, what you mustn't forget is to keep progressing it. Yeah, because if you need to keep progressing it, because if you just go from sitting to standing and you are somebody who wants to, you know, run after your kids, you're not going to just go, one second, Dr. Stand, I can't run after you. And you need that pelvic floor. You know, I've had people telling me when they've shouted at, and no, nobody shouts at their kids, of course, but when they've shouted at their kids, they've had a leakage. So it's adapting it to use in different times. And that's sometimes where people come to us and go, but I've done my exercises. It hasn't worked. It's actually because they haven't progressed it. And I call it like the couch to 5K. So the couch might be you're doing it in sitting, your 5K might be whatever you want to do, whether that's a walk to the shop or whether that's a triathlon. You know, everybody's different. And so some devices, people really love a device and a gadget, but I find some of them, it's quite hard to, you can progress, but you're still just stuck in that standing position. And usually you have something internally, whether actually you'd be better progressing it on in an exercise way or in a, you know, going from standing to stepping to walking, you know, whatever you want to do. So that's where I kind of hang on devices. There is some that are particularly helpful if we find somebody's pelvic floor is weak, but I would definitely recommend being seen really before you buy any.
And so that referral is on the NHS. to a pelvic floor physiotherapist. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So most areas across the country would have NHS pelvic floor physios for women. Unfortunately, there's still a bit of a postcode lottery with the men, which isn't right and it's not correct, but there is a postcode lottery with it.
Prolapses. It'd be really helpful. Could you describe for the viewers, the listeners that don't know, what is a prolapse and how do you know if you've got a prolapse?
So women can suffer from a prolapse. So we've got, the way our anatomy is, we've got the vagina and we've three orifices. And so the way I describe it is the vagina is like the scaffolding and the structure. And if that structure isn't very well formed and working to its potential, then you can have the bladder slightly telescoping in towards the vagina, or you can have the bowel or the uterus dropping down. And so it's sometimes there is nothing you can do about it. It can be genetic. It also is, it can be due to childbirth. It can be, I always remember a patient who lifted really in the old fashioned days of the snooker tables, you know, lifting the money from the snooker tables all the time. You know, it could be that you, no doubt in your clinics, you've had somebody came in and said, I lifted something and I felt that wasn't right. And so sometimes people feel a bulge and they usually get quite a fright and rush off to the GP and get it checked out. And that's, you know, some people come to me who barely got a prolapse and have huge symptoms. And some people come to me who didn't even know they have a prolapse and they've quite a decent prolapse because they're graded in different grades, who didn't even know it existed. So I think that's still quite a mystery to us all. On who and on the different patients, but pelvic floor can really help with that, as can, depending on the type of prolapse you have, sometimes a vaginal pessary can be really helpful, and it doesn't matter what age you are. I think we have to get rid of this. It's only for the older women. It's not at all. It can really, really help, and a lot of work going on in that, I think, all over the whole of the NHS.
And one of the symptoms of prolapse, which patients have come to me with, which I wasn't aware of before, was difficulty opening your bowels and having to do something called splinting.
Yes.
Explain that for the listener.
So between the back passage and the vagina, you've that bit of skin called the perineum and that structure there called the perineum. And so sometimes when patients have a prolapse at the back, so that's called a posterior wall prolapse, you're not kind of getting a clear dispatch of everything coming down and you've been able to pass your bowel motion. So you can get a little pocket. So that's where the rectum would be going in towards the vagina. And so patients are struggling with that. So to push that little pocket back out, they can hold underneath on the perineum, either with their hand or with some tissue paper. You can actually buy a fancy gadget as well called a Femmes. I find most people don't seem to use it that much, but it can be very helpful. It can be helpful for some. But one of the biggest things we go into is actually talking about bowels and how you go to the toilet. So that would be sitting on the toilet. Your knees should be a minimum of 90 degrees, but with your feet flat. Because if you're up on your toes, you're tightening up the muscles. And actually the act of going to either for a pee or a poo, you're actually relaxing your muscles. So having your knees at a minimum of 90 degrees, but if you're able to put them up higher on a stool, that would be amazing. And then you're leaning forward. We should never push because that's not good because you'd be pushing on the prolapse. But a really good way is blowing bubbles, we say to kids, which is brilliant, or blowing out kind of 40 birthday candles. So doing a proper, so rather than a, you're doing a proper blow. And that's using the bulging and bracing. You can use other things like moo, the noise moo or grr. But I sometimes find, well, can you imagine somebody in the loo doing that? It sounds quite funny. And they mightn't be as relaxed. So it's really important to kind of get those bowels and sitting there. You don't need to sit for too long either, but not pushing. And then if you need that splinting to push under, to hold up under there. The other thing, it's really important to have a Goldilocks stool, not too hard and not too soft.
And where I come from with Bristol, we're famous for our Bristol stool chart. If people want to Google that, they will see the Goldilocks poo. Debbie, that's really clear, practical advice. And what you've been talking about all relates to stress incontinence, or sometimes we call it GSI, don't we? Genuine stress incontinence. Can you talk a little bit about urge incontinence? Because although the symptoms are similar, the causes and the treatments are very, very different, aren't they?
Yes, yes. So urge incontinence, and as I just spoke about bowels, if I kind of roll on with that one, one of the big tips I always, if I have anybody new and I'm teaching, I'll always say, sort the bowels out before you sort the bladder. Because if somebody is constipated, you will never get the bladder sorted, and particularly with urge incontinence. So you really need to get that bladder sorted. So, you know, be aware of what medication you're on. If you're all of a sudden on painkillers for a sore shoulder, like I had a lady this morning, you know, it could be different things. So just making sure you've that Goldilocks poo, whether that's diet or whether you need to get something else. And then the next thing would be to make sure you're drinking adequate amount of fluids. So we should all be drinking about 1.5 to 2 litres a day, ideally of water, but obviously that can get a bit boring. But the fluids which can irritate us are caffeine. So tea, coffee, hot chocolate, and don't forget green tea. People always forget green tea is very high in caffeine unless you get a decaf. Alcohol is also an irritant to the bladder. And actually not drinking enough is an irritant to the bladder. So if you're not drinking enough, that concentrated urine can annoy the bladder as well.
We often have conversations with patients who come in who are incontinent or worried about the bladder, who've stopped drinking to try and get rid of their symptoms, and trying to explain to them that they're actually making things worse. It's quite difficult to be able to get their head around, really, isn't it?
It is. And I say to people, like, you kind of want to do it over that kind of awake time. And so that you get up, you don't just kind of down loads of fluid, or you don't not drink because you have to get to work and you're working all day. And then you come home and you load it all up. You kind of want it consistently over the day. And that's for kids too, especially with what we're hearing with school toilets. You know, I think it's really important to make sure our kids are drinking. And so it's making sure you're having that consistent drink. I'm not a stickler on caffeine, to be honest. I'm a little bit careful with caffeine, because caffeine can be really good to give a bowel motion. And so what I say to people is, if you want your caffeine and it helps with your bowels, get up, make your coffee. If you're kind of going out to work, go and get ready and showered. And before you get to go to work, especially women who very often won't go for a bowel motion outside of the house, you know, it's a good way of getting those bowels working in a routine. But for then, if you're finding, you kind of have a look, because if you're drinking caffeine now, you want to see if it is irritating you. So if you've had a few drinks of caffeine, are you running to the toilet quicker? Sometimes by upping your water, you can still enjoy a bit of caffeine, or else be careful starting to withdraw it, because you will get a withdrawal. And I usually say to people, start, you know, the end of the day and move backwards, because obviously caffeine can have the effects on your sleep and everything else. So that's really important. Drinking adequate fluids, avoiding fizzy drinks, even things like fizzy water can annoy some people. So it is worth a trial. Definitely the fizzies very often make a difference, but it definitely is worth the trial of reducing your caffeine or avoiding it, but making sure that's gradual.
And is it also a good idea to not give in to the urgency? So to not try and spend a penny every time you think you might need it?
Yes, but that's easier said than done. Because if you're out and you're worried that you're going to have a leakage, then that's just going to spiral. So I think the first place, and the same at night, if you're getting up at night, I will never tell anyone, oh, don't get up for a week because you won't sleep. So I think it's really important to make sure and start at home. So little things, you've got up, you've gone for a wee. It's an hour later and you go, oh, I need to go again. So instead of that, go, okay, I have laundry to bring upstairs. I'll bring the laundry upstairs. Okay, can you put that laundry away? Oh, I can put that away. And the urge might have gone, you know, by that stage. The other thing is, if you really get the urge, don't move yet, because as you move, that urge will get worse. So try and put it off slightly, and then get up, and you might find the urge goes. And that's where, if you have two toilets, try and go upstairs, you know, to the toilet rather than downstairs. If you're downstairs, just to put it off. And each one putting it off increases that time that you're not going to the toilet.
And for completeness, we better mention that there are also medications available for urge incontinence. But we'd always much rather advocate lifestyle and training and things like that, wouldn't we, on this show? And medications do have quite a few significant side effects, especially for older people. Do you want to talk a bit about that, Debbie?
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah, as you said, we always try and go for the lack of medication first and the natural. But if you do need medication, you know, that is possible, having things called anticholinergics. There's loads of different ones. And also, it depends what age you are. Sometimes when you're over 65, they'll recommend another medication which has less effects on the brain. But yeah, these medications can actually dry so you might feel you have a very dry mouth or dry eyes. Don't forget, if you're in that age bracket of perimenopause, you might also be already having some dryness. So that can make things slightly worse, you know, with that dryness feeling. So it is important to notice that they're not always a quick fix. Some kids actually have to take the anticholinergics as well, and they can really work in those effects, but it's a mixture of everything. And sometimes, you know, a patient will walk into clinic and they're just at their wit's end. I'm very lucky we have the time to talk to them, because it's really important as part of our treatment and everything that we've more time than your GP colleagues have. And so what's important is we kind of know what the patient wants, where the patient is, knowing that I haven't got a magic wand. And sometimes actually having the anticholinergic while they're starting some of the things can actually get patients on side and help them as well, you know, because that's helping. And sometimes whether it's the thought of they're taking that medication that will stop them going for a week, who knows? But that's really important. But obviously still drink your fluids, still watch your bowels, and still do your pelvic floor exercises, because if you've got that urgency and you're sitting down at your desk, you need to be able to walk to the toilet. And as I say to people, you know, you can't just stop it dribbling down the leg. We want the pelvic floor working, yeah, which is very important.
Debbie, we're coming sadly to the end of our time, and you've given us a huge amount of practical information, and you mentioned resources earlier. I must tell people about your website, Debbie Dillon Pelvic Health, which we'll put on the show notes. Are there any final tips you want to give to us in terms of how we can help and maintain our pelvic health?
Yeah, I think it's just really important to do your pelvic floor, especially once you've had a baby, and there's plenty of resources out there. NHS England has put a lot of funding into perinatal pelvic health at the moment, which is great. You also have the POGP to look at if you've any issues with your pelvic floor, which is pelvic obstetric gynecology physios. And they have loads of different leaflets on that, and the Squeezy app, which will help that. But I think it's try your pelvic floor first, make sure you're drinking adequate fluids, make sure your bowels are working, and you should never have painful sex. Sex should never be painful. And I think if you're having any issues and you've tried to do something with those and they're continuing, go and chat to your GP to get a referral in, or your midwife, or your health visitor, you know, or another physio if you're seeing them. They might be able to refer you within the service. So there's a lot of things out there on social media, but make sure you're obviously, like everything, be careful what you're reading. And the NHS has some great pages out there as well for different places. And I know NHS Somerset is in the middle of doing theirs at the moment.
And finally, are there any red flag symptoms, symptoms that people really should go and see their GP with?
Yes. If you hadn't suffered from continence and all of a sudden you're suffering, you know, kind of quite quickly with any continence issues, definitely either bowel or bladder. I would also, if you've got any pain in that area and it's quite new, and obviously any bleeding, postmenopausal bleeding, or any bleeding that's just not right for you. And obviously, if you pee and or poo and you've any blood in your with guards poo or pee, make sure and go to see your GP and get a referral.
Debbie, thank you so much. That's been a fascinating half hour, a whistle stop tour, and I think there's still an awful lot more that we'd like to talk about. But thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Go well.
Thank you.
Thank you.